questions, but I think now I'm going past answering questions. Okay, so when I wanted to put the image on, I made a picture box. Okay, so I took over here a picture box when I wanted the image to go up. I took a picture box, and then I went to image. And I clicked on the three little dots out there, which lets me put in an image. And I went to, and I used local resources. Local resources is when I want it basically associated with this form. If I want it associated with a lot of things, then I can click on project resource, and then it will be associated with anything inside the project. But I just wanted it for this form, so I made it a local resource. And if you click on local resources and then click on import, you can go find the image that you want. So you can go around your hard drive or whatever and find the image that you want by saying you want to import. Then the image comes in, and basically they do their magic and save it in the background, and the image is available. Yeah.
I've always used project resource files. I find it a lot easier because it gets saved up. I'm not sure if the local one does.
No, the local gets saved in the background.
Yeah.
If you save the project resource, it actually gets saved right within the project.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can actually see it.
Yep.
So you're right, either one will work.
Yeah.
So you can use, if you want it on the form, you can say, I want a local resource. If not, you can say project resource, and you go and you import that. But that's how you bring an image onto your form. Pardon me? Okay, I started out by saying picture box. And I drag picture box over here. So what I've got here are the properties for picture box.
Okay.
So if I look at, this is picture box. Okay, that's the picture box. And I named it PicCIS. So I've got the properties for picture box right there. So now what I did is that, okay, now I want to put an image in it. So I went to the image property. And when you go to the image property, there will be three little dots over here. Lots of times when they are, let me get out of this. Lots of times when you go to one of these, okay, see the three little dots over there?
Yeah.
That's what you want to click on. Okay, so I'm clicking on those three little dots. Hello. Image. Click on those three little dots. And then, as I said, on this one, I did a local resource, but you can also do project resource. It doesn't matter which one you do. They store them a little differently, because if it's a local resource, it's only for this form, so they kind of store it in with the form. If it's project resource, then it's available to all the forms you might put onto this project, and so they store it inside the project. Okay, so you can do it either way. And I then imported it. When you click on import, or import down there, either one, you go and you find it. So you find the picture someplace, and when you find it, you bring it up and say okay, and you're all set.
Can everyone see okay up there on the board?
If not, bring up your own.
Yeah.
Huh?
That's what I had to do right here, so
okay.
Yeah. It's kind of hard. I was going to say maybe I can like...
No, in all honesty, if you download these things before you come to class, you're going to be a lot better off, because then you can open them real easily. You know, just set up a library of all of these downloaded and unzipped, and then it's going to be a lot easier. Okay, so that is my chapter 2, and that is the images. Okay? Now, this particular one, CIS department, notice that's a label. And I put a label over there. Well, usually a label doesn't have a border. But I decided I wanted it to have a border. So I went and found Border Style and put Fix 3D. Okay, so this gives me an arrow for choices, and I could pick none or fix single or fix 3D. So that got me, you know, the kind of 3D kind of embedded image that I wanted to get for that. So that's a label that has been set up with a border and set up with color down here. So that I made it the blue, and I made it the font. I used Georgia font, 15.75, etc. So I've got all of those things set too. So I made it Georgia, I made it bold, and I made it size 16. Okay, and then I put a border around it. So you can do a lot with properties to make the look. And then I came down here, and this one has a background color and a foreground color. So I put background and foreground colors into that. Now the welcome, when I run this, you're not going to see welcome there. Okay, so we're going to run this. And notice the welcome isn't there. Okay? However, if I click on welcome, it says welcome and does a pop-up. And then when I say okay to that, welcome is now there. Okay, so I have changed it and made welcome there. So now I've got to go and look at the properties that I set for welcome. And if you go in here, I said, okay, label welcome visible equals true. So the visible was set to false originally, and now I have reset it to true. Okay, so wait a minute, that's not what I meant to do. So if I go back to design and I look at this button and I scroll down to visible, I'm sorry, look at this and scroll down to visible, you can see that visible is set to false. So that means when it first runs, visible is false. And then inside the code, I changed it. So when I click this, it became visible. Okay? And I did that inside the code, whoops, where I said visible, set the visible property to true. So I've got that label, the visible is now set to true. So there's a lot of looks and feels you can get by playing around with these properties. Now, back to the design. This was the problem that I encountered. When you look at that image, this one that says error image, as I said, I was copying something from one place to another and it popped up. I have never seen it before. Okay, but it suddenly happened. I have no idea where it came from. And then, luckily, I played around with it so that when his didn't work, it was real easy. I looked to see if the error image was set, and it was. I suspect you didn't set it.
No, I saved it off the web and then
right.
Saved it to the computer and I just imported it.
And it was set. So I went in and hit the cancel on that, and then it worked just fine. But it had, the reason I knew it was set is it had a red X in there, and it had an address or information over there. And again, if you click on the dots, it when I came up, it had a little box with a red X in here. And I cleared it out, it was local for me, and I cleared it out, and then it was fine. Okay? So that was something I have never seen before. Same version, same everything, all of a sudden, poof. So, and I don't think it was that I didn't notice, because it was pretty obvious. So anyway, they keep upgrading, and sometimes it's a for better or for worse. Okay? So those are the basics on this. Okay? So now if you go back to my main page, there's four things going on here. InfoCalc and Variable Calc and Project Math, I'm going to kind of go over quickly and suggest that you spend a little time looking at them, because they're all basically the same. I think I'll start with InfoCalc. So I'm going to come over here and do a file, close solution, and a file, open project, and I'm looking for chapter 3 and InfoCalc, I think was the one. Okay, this again is just showing some of the basics. Name, for example, up there is been fixed, obviously. So if I look at name, okay, and I come back in here and I look at it, it is going to have been set right down here in my font. I made it bold. Okay, so you can see that it is set to bold. Okay. That one thing, font, lets me go in and pick a font style, and pick a size. And then if I want color, I can go back down to the next thing, and I can pick up a font color. Okay, so if I run this, and when I'm running it, I like to bring a click on the code, because if I click on the code, then I can see the code as I'm running it. Okay? So instead of leaving the design clicked on when I click on the start, I like to bring up the code, because then I can see the code as I'm running. And that just makes more sense to me. So I'm now going to click on Start, and there is the code. Okay? So, if I put in a greet, I'm going to put a text name in here. Okay, so I'm going to put in here a text name, John, and I'm going to say greet. And it says, hello, John, hello, John, hello, John. Now, if I put Doe over in the next box, it would be saying, hello, John Doe, hello, John Doe, hello, John Doe. No, actually, it didn't. It's just going to do it. Because I said text name. It's just showing text name. So label greet, that means I can put something into a label. Notice I have the names here. I have a label, I have a text, and I have a message box. And I can put them something in all of those. And that's what I did. I put it in the label, I put it in the text box, and I put it in the message box. Okay. So if I go back and look at the form, that was text name. This is text last name. So if I put both of those in, let's see what would happen. And I didn't do my... So I'm going to put John here. I'm going to put Doe here and say greet. and it still just says "Hello, John," because I said concatenate. Let me try to take a picture of that one more time. I said concatenate with just text name dot text. If I wanted the last name, I would have had to have concatenated with text name dot text, concatenated with a space, concatenated with text last name dot text. But I only did one of them. Now, the other thing I want you to notice is when I go to run this, I put in John, and then I hit tab, and look where it went. It didn't go to what I would think would be the next spot. And if I hit tab again, it went up to the button. And if I hit tab again, it's kind of going all around. Okay? That is controlled by the tab index. So if you look at here, the tab index is zero. So that first thing that I put on, my tab index over here is zero. Okay? The name that I then, this, has a tab index of one. Then this has a tab index of 16. So clearly it was an afterthought. The tab indexes go in the order that I put things on the page. So they follow the order that I put things in on the page. If I want to fix that, I can just go change the tab index. And then it would tab over to that. Okay? So if you put the stuff up kind of in this random kind of way, then you should go over here and adjust the tab indexes so that you can tab through the page correctly. Okay? If you put them in order, then it will do it for you. But most of us are not that organized. Okay? And so when I look down here, this is where it went after the first name, and that indeed is tab index of 3. And then it went back up here, and that indeed is tab index 4. So it's putting on the tab indexes as I put things on the form. And again, I can go and adjust that to get the to get it the way I want it to be.
You don't need to index like name and feet and inches, just index boxes, whatever, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nope, I just... Now, notice the difference between feet and inches. What made that... One of them is like this. And one of them is like this.
Made one to read only.
That's right. Read only means that I... And it's a good thing to do. Means the user can't type anything in there. So read only means the user can't type in there. And I find it at least very annoying to run into a form that has a lot of things on it and I have to figure out which ones I should enter and which ones I shouldn't. Because it's going to calculate inches. Well, but if I left that as a regular text box, I'd think I was supposed to put something in inches. Okay? And so I would be doing the work to put something in inches. So read-only means that the user can't put stuff in that box. And that is a good thing. So, on that box, I did the calculation. So I've got Ann, and then I want to come over here and put Smith. And hit greet, and then I want to have feet, 7 feet, and I'll have 84 inches. Okay, so it did the calculation, and I've got 84 inches. Now notice that on the form it wasn't obvious that I had something in this spot. Basically I had a blank label and I am putting something in there. Let's see, what else have I got? Date. It puts up a date. And notice I put the date down there, so this would have been a good one to also make a read-only, because I want the date to happen when I click, not when the user types it in. And the last one, I concatenated all the name together. So I said show, and it concatenated Ann with a space with last name. So it concatenated the name together. And there's all of the things that I have. You know, all of the things that I put on the form I've got sitting over there.
Does the Alt X always exit? You didn't have it from
Yeah.
It's just right there, right there, that little drop down.
Yeah.
Okay, so these are basically just going through a few of the basics. And I'm going to look at the next one, which I believe is variable calculations. Okay, so on this one I'm doing add, subtract, multiply, divide, all that good stuff. I really would suggest that you kind of look these over at some point at home just to kind of make sure that you understand what's going on in them. So, I started out here. Once you have got it moving around on its own, it is a pain in the neck to put back.
I did this because of evil. He wants you to delete everything off.
Yep. And he usually likes it just full, just on the property and the solutions. Sometimes it puts the solutions up, but most of the time just more space, the more you can see.
Okay.
So,
yep. Yeah, right. I like to see all the stuff floating around. But even if I don't want to see it, I tend to do these kinds of things, which pins it over to the side, as opposed to making it go away entirely. Mainly because I've done undock far too many times and never gotten myself back together, you know, without a lot of frustration, shall we say. Okay. Here I'm defining variables. So up there, I've got a global variable, and I called it GV, the global variable. A global variable is a variable inside all of the subroutines that I write. And they make the comment that a class-level variable, always called a global. Okay. when I grew up, I called it a global variable, and I will continue to call it a global variable because I will never remember to call it a class level variable. But probably that is the more accurate term nowadays. Okay. I shouldn't say sometimes, I should say by me. But anyway, so I've got a variable that I've defined up there. And I define the variable and I give it a type. I can also have an equal sign on it and give it a value if I want to, but I don't usually do that, but I can. But this is a variable that all of the subroutines understand. Whereas down here, when I define a variable inside a subroutine, only that subroutine knows about that variable. It is a local variable. And only that subroutine knows about the variable. Okay? Which is fine if that's all I want to know. And later on, we'll get into passing data between things. And so there is a way to let something else know about it if you pass it. But we're not there now. So for now, if you want to be able to refer to something in all of the subroutines, you want to put it up at the top and make it a global. If you want it to be local, then you want to put it within the subroutine. A lot of people just make everything global. That's not really a good plan. You should really make the things that you know you're going to just use locally local. And as I said, we'll get into how you can pass information, but we're not there yet. So for now, we're just declaring them either globally or locally. Okay. So now I've got private sub button major. And I said dim string major as a string. Okay, as a text field, basically. And I said set it to empty. So I said make it equal to string empty. So it is empty. So string major is empty. And then I said, okay, now take it and put it in the text box. Well, if I put something that is empty into a text box, okay, this is the routine. And if I put something empty into a text box and I do a show of something empty, then what I see is empty. Okay, so that was an empty string and I put it in the text box and it's empty, and I put it up here and it's empty. Then I went back and I said, okay, now put CIS into it. Okay. So after I click OK, I put CIS in there. And then when I show it and put up the message box, I see CIS. Now, last Thursday I used message box and I wrote MSGBOX. Okay, that's the quick and dirty way. That's the original way. It's the quick and dirty way. So when I am doing it, as in I want to debug, I want to see what something contains, I use MSGBOX because I'm lazy. Okay? If I want to have it as part of the program, the way to write it out is messagebox.show. And if you write messagebox.show, there are a couple of thousand, not really, but there are a bunch of things you can put in there, such as what title you want, what color you want, what font you want, what type you want. There's just a whole lot of stuff you can play around with message box. And we will get to those. So if I come over here and I type message box.show, and it gives me 21 different options that I can play around with and stuff that I can put in. Okay? So, have a good time if you want to sometime. I'm not running through the 21 options. We will see other options as we go along. but message box dot show, you can get a lot in there and make it, you know, dance for you if you want to. So, I have set the major okay, and now it's really set. The next one is a problem, and I've commented it out, so it's not a problem. But if I take these remarks out right now, I've got a single quote in front of each line, and the single quote is a remark. And so it has made those a remark. So looking at it quickly, why is it going to crash? It's going to crash.
It's those variables that are in the section above it?
That's right. Because it has no idea what string major is. Because I defined it up there. So since I defined it in that subroutine, I can't use it in that subroutine. If I wanted it available, then I should have made it global. Okay? So if I go and make that global, then it will work.
How'd you take that?
Either way, I can define it in here. So I can just say, we'll take these out first. Okay, so, well, actually, that should stay a comment. Okay, so it's giving me trouble, and it is complaining about string major. So I can either define it in this subroutine, or I can define it globally. Okay, either one will get it to work. So if I go back over here and say, dim string major as string and make it, well, I won't make it equal to anything, as string, now it is cleared up. Okay, I'm no longer getting the problem because I've got dim string major as string and it's just fine. Okay, so I put that in and now if I run it, hello. And now when I click on that, it puts computer information systems there. Okay. So it took that and put it into the textbox computer information systems.
That's one way to fix it.
The other way to fix it is to define it locally. Okay. So the other way to fix it is basically to close this, come back, and I'll comment that out. And I will take this and copy it in here. Only I'm not going to have the set it to empty. Okay? So now if I run it, it does it just fine.
Is it a whole different variable than the one in the first section?
Yeah. So if it's global, it's not, but if it's local, yes.
Defined in more than
yes.
One, it's separate in each of those.
Yep. So I can fix that by either defining it locally or defining it globally, but I have to define it. Okay. Yeah.
I like to think of it like holding cards. Like a private seat, you know, you're holding your own cards. Public is around the table, you can see them. So only the ones that are holding it can use those cards.
That's a good analogy. I like that.
That's how I thought of it when I first got it.
Yeah, no, that's a real good analogy.
So that helps at all. You need it. So you have an ace. One person has an ace. The other person can't use that ace because they can't see it. It's on the table. You can use it. Or if it's in their hand.
Okay. No, I like that. Okay, then you have numbers that I can add, subtract, multiply, and divide. The big tricky part here is look down at these statements and which one is different than the other. Which one has more information in it? Look at the add, subtract, multiply, and divide.
Add.
Yeah, because I have to do the same thing that we looked at before. The plus can mean add, and it can mean concatenate. And so I have to do the conversion, in this case, convert to a decimal, convert double, converts to a decimal. And I've converted it, and then I can add. But it's because the plus can mean concatenate. So if I take this, and I'm running, and I comment it out, I think I'm probably going to overwork this. And now I go and run. And I put in 27 and 3, and I say add. Look what I get. Okay, I get 273 because it's concatenated. Okay. So, when I remove that, it ends up concatenating. What else did I do in here? I set up a constant, and a constant is something that is not going to change. So if you look down at button another add, I set up a constant. And that one, it takes all right. Okay, it added those two things together, and it takes it all right. And that's because I defined them as double as numbers and gave it a number value, and so it accepted it all right. Now, that's not terribly realistic. We don't usually take two numbers and add them together and define the two numbers and add them together, because why not just define the answer? Okay, but you can make something a constant and then it knows that it's a number. And then I did a little bit of converting, and converting something to string C means that it converts to currency. Converting to string just means it is now string. And you can also use a C, S-T-R, when you want to convert to a string, and a C, I-N-T, when you want to convert to an integer. Okay. So those let me do conversions. As I said, all we're looking at right now is just some of the basics that we need to kind of be able to access when we want to write programs. So it's boring, but it's also stuff you got to know.
Building blocks.
Yep. Questions? Okay, the next one along this line is the math one. Whoops, I don't want the zip version. And this one does add, subtract, multiply, and divide again. but the things I want to look at are integer division, get number, and power. Okay? Integer division uses that kind of a slash. A regular division uses that kind. Integer division uses that kind. So it will give you an integer answer. Mod. Does anybody remember or know what mod means?
The remainder.
Yeah. Mod gets you the remainder. So if I put in a number...
Modulus, right?
Yeah. If I put in a number... let's see, 28 divided by 9. Okay, and get remainder. Excuse me? Yeah, that is right. All right. I just can't do it in my head. It is giving me the result of 1 as the remainder. Okay. If I put in 15 and divide by 4, it is giving me the remainder of 3. And I don't quite know why I put it two places, but I did. Okay, so it's giving me the remainder of 3, because 4 goes into 15, 4, 8, 12, and there's 3 left. So it's giving me the remainder of 3. And the last thing down there is giving me power. So if I want 15 to the 4th power, I can click on that, and that's what it will be, okay? So it's 15 times 15 times 15 times 15, and I'll take its word for it. So that's giving me 15 to the 4th power.
You just did that for the text align, by the way.
Pardon me?
I think you just did that for the alignment. For the text align.
Yeah, that's probably true. Integer division. Divide. Oh, but I need an integer in order to do that. Integer division, 0.456 divided by 5 gives me 3. Divided by 3 gives me 5. Okay, because it's converted to an integer to do an integer divide. So those are really the only things in here. And the next one is kind of interesting. What did I just do? New. I don't want that. File, open project. Whoops. File, close solution. It usually works all right if you open a project on top of it, but it's just better practice to make it go away. Okay, so I'm going to look at exceptions. And these are, instead of crashing, I can use a try catch as. Okay? So I'm going to basically catch a problem. Okay? So catch a problem. In this case, I'm catching it just as an exception. So, I have a number, and if I put in 45.12 and I say convert, it converts it to 45. Okay? Because I'm doing a convert to an integer. I did a convert to an integer, and then I displayed it as currency. So I did a convert to an integer, and then I displayed it as currency. Okay, now if I had put up here A in there and said convert, it crashes. Okay, so it crashes. What I want to try to avoid is crashing. So I can basically say I want the program to catch the problems. And so if I come down to this second one and I put in A24 and I say convert with the try-catch, it comes back and tells me it's a data problem. So it's telling me that it can't do it, which I much prefer to having it crash on me. So I'm saying try this. If it's a problem, catch it as a problem and put out the word data problem. So it's going to let me know. Okay. If I come down here and I've got 12 divided by A, it is going to say data, not numeric. So up here, I just said I'm going with the generic, tell me it's a problem. Here, there are certain specific problems I can use, such as invalid. Okay, I can write invalid cast exception, which means basically it's not a number. So it came back and told me that the data is not numeric. If I put a 2 in here and do a convert, it tells me the right answer. Now, interestingly enough, if I put a 0 in, it is supposed to tell me that it is can't divide by 0. But, in fact, what it's telling me is that I have infinity. Okay?
That's neat.
If you read in the book, and I think it's the book, current version, it will tell you that it will say something about you can't divide by 0. Huh. But, in fact, dividing by 0 can also be called infinity, because 0 goes into an infinite number of times. So it comes back with infinity, even though I told it put up another error or something. Yeah.
Put an exclamation point in there or something, like a symbol. I'm just curious about the invalid cast exception there. Alright, cool. I think I've tried making my own exceptions.
So, you know, I told it to put out the words another error. Or I could have been more specific and say, can't divide by 0. And it said, yeah, right, and put out infinity. So, sometimes it has a mind of its own. But when you're doing things that's important, it's a good idea to do this try and catch so that things don't crash on you. And if you've ever worked as a programmer and gotten a call in 2:00 in the morning because something just crashed, you definitely appreciate that.
Okay, happens.
Yeah. And nobody's happy with you. And
no,
you're not happy
sure.
with a lot of things. Although the worst part is, one of the companies that I worked for, you had a weekend that you were on call. So it wasn't necessarily your problem that just crashed. It was anybody's problem that just crashed. So if you got the call, it wasn't because of something you did necessarily. It was something that somebody else did, and that's a lot harder to debug.
Basically, you hope it's your fault.
That's right. Exactly, because it's a lot easier to find it if it's something you wrote, probably, than something somebody else wrote. But things like payroll checks going out, you tend to get the call early in the morning if payroll's not going out. Because there's going to be a lot of people that aren't too happy with you if payroll doesn't go out.
Yeah.
If the bills go out a day late, but if payroll. And at one point I was involved in writing a payroll system. And, you know, we were absolutely paranoid about it. Because, as I said, probably the most important thing is payroll. The people that you work with, the people you see tomorrow, are the ones who didn't get the paycheck.
Oh my gosh. That sucks so bad.
And the last one in here is group, which is just a small thing. What we're basically doing is looking at some of the stuff in Chapter 3. I pick what I think is kind of the important stuff, and I do examples with that. But it's one of the few books that I actually ask people to buy because I think that the book has a lot of good information in it. And I really think you should read the book. Because I can't cover everything. You've seen how long the books are, the pages are. We're what, on page 130 already and it's only chapter 3 or something?
That book's really good. That book is really good. So, and it'll help you out in other programming classes too. Those of you taking C++.
Yeah.
Help you get a better understanding of what, how things run and those kind of programming languages.
So this is actually a real simple program. And I'll go over it in a second. First of all, I have a message box that pops up. And then I have something where I put in item number 111, has a price of 45, has a cost of 23, calculate profit. That would have been a good place to do a read-only because I didn't want them to calculate the profit. I'm calculating it for them. So that would have been a nice place to put a read-only. I also converted everything once you hit the calculate button to currency. Okay, so I converted it all over, as you can see. The clear clears it all out, and the exit gets me out. Now, when I designed this, this little mark around here is a group box. Okay? And the group box just classifies all that as a group, so I can move it around as a group. So if I decide I want it someplace else, or I decide that I want to set it to some color or something like that, I believe you can do that with a group. But I can now take and say, okay, I'm going to drag this over, and the whole group is now dragging over so that I don't have to drag the stuff individually. If I come down and say I want the, where did it go? Okay, I've changed all of the colors to red. I can change all of the fonts. I can do kind of, so it's a time saver. I mean, that's the main thing it is I can treat it like a group and just make the changes to it all at once. But that's really what it does for me. So, we've now finished chapter 3.
Nice.
I have a question.
Yeah.
If you have like radio buttons or check boxes, when you clear the form, do you have to clear those things too?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, you want to make them stop being showing. Yes. And we'll get into that, I think, real soon. There's some examples of that.
I was just wondering because I got an error message to
that. Okay.
Must have been something else, though.
All right, so here are the ones that we've kind of gone through, and then we're going to start looking at decisions next week. And if you go and look at it. Okay, that's what I want you to do. So that's your assignment, is to just write a program that does all of these things. Okay. And what I did is, this lends itself perfectly to if statements. But I said, write it without if statements. And then I'm going to have you go back and modify it and put if, do it with if statements, so you can see the two ways of doing it. So basically, if you write it without if statements, you're trusting that your user hits the right button. You're going to have a button to do this and a button to do that and a button to do something else. So if you don't have if statements, you have to have a lot more faith in your user that they're going to hit the right button. Okay? Once we go into if statements, then we can check and determine what they're doing. So, we're done.
Just one note. Do yourselves a favor. Check out the book's support section. They've got videos and stuff somewhere online. And it's all in the book. Probably on the front cover or whatnot. And if not, you can probably find it on Google. Just look up the Kip Irvine or whatnot, or Tony Gaddis. And he's got like a website full of videos and how he kind of goes through the tutorials. And it's really good. It really was helpful for me anyway when I took the class. To kind of just get a second look on how he did things. As you read the book, too, it's great. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So.
I agree.